Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 153 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. And Frank, we will have a Bill Scott. We're going to have a little Capologist 101 today, assistant general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. But it's not about Edmonton. It's more about the salary cap, the fact that there's a boatload of teams that are going to start the season in LTI, what that means, and how teams and their capologists are going to have to be really good money managers before the season starts. So we'll get to all of that. Frank, you had a big hockey game last night. So priorities, couldn't do the interview. How'd the game go? You're here. So I see there's no stitches. So that's good.
Yeah, I am here. It was actually not a game. We do a little skills clinic on Sunday nights for our kids. So that's what tied me up last night. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing the interview with Bill Scott. It's the cap is so incredibly important with every single facet of today's game that, you know, you see teams that are really good at it and find different advantages that it really sets their team up for success throughout the year.
Well, and this is the year I think this might be the most teams to start a season in LTI that's ever happened. And, you know, how will that impact potential trades or lack thereof during the season? You know, a little bit less potential cap flexibility. And I think that's why we're seeing even more players, Frank, that are likely going to be signing PTOs because, you know, teams still want to make some trades, but until they can make trades, they can't really sign any of these guys.
Yeah, I still don't foresee a lot of trades taking place. And it's interesting to watch teams attempt to spend some of that money now. Like, you know, you take a look at a team like the Montreal Canadiens, for instance, and the LTIR juggling that they did this summer. They traded away Shea Weber's contract in order to get out of LTIR only for Carey Price to then basically, you know, they haven't full on said it, but it's not expected that Carey Price is going to resume his career at any point. So now they have an additional $10.5 million that they need to manage on LTIR. And so, you know, they've gone about spending part of that money now, and they're going to try and get a capture, as you mentioned, Bill will talk about, as close to 82.5 as they can, to then utilize all 10.5 of Carey Price's money. So it's a delicate dance, and it's amazing to see. This is the trickle down effect of the pandemic and the number of years now that we have in the flat cap or essentially flat that impacts the game so much. And, you know, we'll talk, you know, additionally, and I teased and mentioned it a week ago on last week's pod, the big jump that we're going to have in a couple of years. Well, there's a number of people out there, team executives, I think some people at the NHL Players Association, some agents that would, instead of, you know, now knowing that we're essentially going to have a $9 million increase in a couple of years, once the debt to owners is paid off, they'd like to see that smoothed out now. Like, instead of doing one hop of $9 million, let's do three straight years of $3 million increases so that teams that are up against it now can benefit instead of one large increase where, you know, I can just see it now. Can't you? A $9 million, like, players should be timing their free agency for that spending spree that will take place, if that is indeed what happens.
Dude, there'll be a lot of guys fist pumping like Jeff Skinner did with the Buffalo Sabres, right?
What a pick. What a name for you. Like, it's the perfect guy.
Yeah, so that's definitely what could occur here in the future. And I wonder if there'll be an appetite. I'm sure there'll be, as you mentioned, Frank, that the teams that are up against it will be, hey, let's get $3 million next year and, you know, three the year after. And then rather than wait a few years to get nine, right? I'd be curious if there's an appetite for it. I could see other teams saying, no, we're actually in good cap situation. We don't need that. So, because that gives us an advantage for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and that's... it's interesting. It could go any which way. I'd imagine that because this is the way the CBA was negotiated, that this is the way it's going to remain. Yeah. That I don't see any change coming, but I could see someone making the case as to why it would make sense. And I could also see, you know, a number of teams sort of not being able to control themselves when that $9 million increase pops in.
Yeah. Big announcement today. Not a huge surprise. I know, Frank, you had mentioned this to me a while back, but Nick Suzuki is now the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. And man, this is, you know, Nick Suzuki's played 209 NHL games. Right. He's been a productive player in his career thus far, but man, that is a lot of pressure in that market, in an organization that's, I wouldn't say they're rebuilding. They're definitely retooling. As you mentioned, you know, Carey Price is gone. Shea Weber, they moved his contract out. Like, they had a really disappointing season last year. That's a lot to ask for a young player like Nick Suzuki, who, you know, is 23 years of age?
Yeah, he's 23. I think he's well suited to handle it. He's also going to be around for a long time, signed through 2030, the longest tenured track player on the team. If you take a look at their contract list and some of the guys that will be around for a long time. And I also think the Canadians and Marty St. Louis have gotten a real chance to know him and to see that has a unique temperament that I think, you know, with his sort of calm nature, is going to be able to manage this in a hockey mad market like Montreal. So I think Suzuki is a great choice. In some ways I was thinking that, Brendan Gallagher, who of course wears an A, would be a great choice as well. Just based on style of play. Like, he's one of those guys that's always dragging his team into the fight. I think Suzuki has a lot more room in his game to grow. Like, you've seen the progression and path that he's taken, you know, breaking the 60 point barrier and continuing to progress as their number one center, that, you know, I think he's in a great spot to keep growing. But you're right. It's just different in Montreal. They look at you in that market a bit differently, but I think they also gave him the opportunity to think about it this summer. I thought they were going to do this at the draft. I know that they flew his family in for the draft in Montreal, and I think they were going to make a big scene of it. And I think instead what happened was they basically gave him the idea of this and said, why don't you take it back and think about it? Make sure that this is what you really want. And I don't know. He didn't say no.
Well, I can understand. Of course, I think it's everybody's dream. You always want to be the captain, right?
Not everybody's dream.
Well, that's true. That's fair. But a lot of players would, you know, feel, hey, I'm up for this and stuff. And it would, I'd like to know, and maybe it's happened, how many players, if someone asked them, would you want to be captain, have said no? Like, I'm sure there's some, but I bet you it's a pretty short list.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Well, so, 'cause how do you come back from that? What do they think of you if you say no?
Right. Exactly. And so I think it's a lot of added pressure, especially in that market. You know what? Maybe he's perfectly capable of handling it. You mentioned Brendan Gallagher. He, you know, just because you wear the C doesn't mean you're the only leader on the team, obviously. It there is added responsibility to it. And hey, well, you know what? Maybe Nick Suzuki turns out to be a great choice. It's just entering now his fourth NHL season. You know what? Now he's got that way big contract now around him. So that's just a lot of added pressure for a young player all at once. You get the massive deal that kicks in and you have the C.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. He's in good shape. He's got that. I mentioned it, unique personality. He's not overexcited. He's generally pretty calm by nature. And, you know, he's going to have a good support group. Brendan Gallagher has been there forever in that market and understands it. You know, he can lean on some other guys that he's played with previously. He can lean on, even though he's not going to be there every day, have a conversation with Carey Price, whoever was the captain, Shea Weber, whoever. Carey Price in a lot of ways was the de facto captain of the team that I think a lot of people relied on for advice and insight and how to handle that market. And he can still continue to do that with Carey Price.
We're seeing more PTOs, Frank, around the NHL. I have count about 12, what I would call veteran NHL players. You know, some guys with a lot of games played, like Eric Staal. We knew this for a while, is in Florida. James Neal's in Columbus. Cody Eakin goes to Calgary. Calvin DeHaan and Derek Stepan in Carolina. Like, man, Carolina's defense is pretty deep, right? You know, Calvin DeHaan, obviously, must have liked the conversation they had with him there, but like, I thought he's still a pretty good defenseman. Like that, if they get him on a bargain basement deal, that could be a really good signing again for them. What do you make of DeKaiser into Vancouver? How much do you think he's got left?
Well, that's what I want to see, is like, take him away from that contract and the expectations. You know, what's his health like? Is he able to stay on the ice? Like, that's really been a big detriment to his career over the last number of years. I personally wasn't sure how much he had left, but I'm intrigued to see, because if Vancouver can find someone to, you know, even at $750 or whatever it costs you, you know, they need bodies. They really do. They really need bodies on the right side. And so DeKaiser being on the left is not exactly a textbook fit, but an additional veteran presence for someone to rely on. I don't know that you can go wrong if he has enough game left.
Tyler Motte is a player. Man, Vancouver traded him at the deadline because they thought they wouldn't be able to re-sign him. He'd be too expensive. He goes to New York. They get a pick for him. And here we are. It's September 12th, and he still hasn't signed a contract. Did that surprise you?
It does and it doesn't. I think he's asking for a lot. I don't know what exactly the ask is at this point. I think it changes over the course of the summer as you get this late, but I think around this time last year, he was asking, you know, somewhere around 175 on an extension. And that continued all the way through until the trade deadline, when they ended up moving him on deadline day to the Rangers. And you know, he's expensive. I think a lot of teams view him as expensive for the type of point production that he provides. But I think when you look at someone like Tyler Motte, the big thing is, going back to Vancouver, he drove the production from the other players that were on his line. He was the guy. If you look at the numbers of his line mates after Tyler Motte left Vancouver, they cratered. And that was a big, I think, feather in his cap. He's got sandpaper. He's got grit. I think Tyler Motte has a lot to offer. It's just, what price is he going to come in at? And teams really struggle paying that type of money to guys that are bottom six forwards.
Well, especially in a flat cap, right, Frank? Right. Those depth guys.
He's the exact guy that's getting squeezed, right?
Yes, totally. So I look and I wonder, basically we're a week away, right? Of course, players have to report for medicals on the 21st, but, and then they're on the ice on the 22nd. But you look at veterans, you basically got a week, because you got to fly in, you got to get to that city, you know, you got to get comfortable.
Do your medical.
Yeah, do your medical on the 21st. And so I think you're going to see a lot. I know teams have submitted a fair amount of PTO offers to players. It's just a matter of, you know, whether or not they'll sign them. All right, Jake Virtanen, the owners have offered him a PTO. You know, they're expecting to hear a yay or a nay. Zach Aston-Reese had been offered one. He signed in Toronto. And I think that's a, you know what? There's a guy, you talk about a bottom six player who does a really good job of not getting scored on, mm-hmm. which is a pretty important job. Like he's a player that I think he's a PTO. Obviously I look at Toronto's bottom six and I think they feel like he could really fit in there. It's just a matter of, I'm kind of surprised they didn't sign him, to be honest. Right. I think maybe it's a matter of money, or he thinks, hey, I go to training camp and preseason and someone around the league is going to like me, like Chris Versteeg. Cause just cause you sign a PTO with the one team doesn't mean you have to sign there. But I think Aston-Reese is a very quiet, good PTO who could turn out to be a really good depth signing for the Maple Leafs if they get him.
Yeah, I think Aston-Reese was really interested in going to the New Jersey Devils. He's a New Jersey kid, and I think they just weren't able to make the room for him. And so I think he kind of hung around most of the summer thinking or hoping that he might land there. I think there was some initial interest from the Maple Leafs on July 13th when free agency opened. I think there were five or six teams that had been in the mix to get a deal done, and he was really interested in going to the Devils. So it didn't work out, and now here he is. It's a lot of competition there in Toronto, and I wonder, when you look at so many guys in on bargain contracts that are fighting for those last few spots in the lineup, sometimes players shy away from that, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I'd rather go to a spot where I have a really good shot at a team, or the math looks really good, or, you know, whatever it is, they've got a ton of guys right in that mix, you know, 750 grand that are clawing for jobs. Adam Gaudette, Kyle Clifford, Joey Anderson. I mean, it's a whole mix of guys.
Yeah, I think Reese just offers more. And I think maybe that's, you got some confidence for him. He feels like, hey, I can come here, I can win a job on this team. And it's a competitive.
I want a guy that does that. 100%. I don't want a guy that's saying, hey, I want guaranteed power play time as he's going through the free agent day. Like, you got to come in and earn it.
Well, and another guy like that, Frank, I keep hearing is PK Subban, who wants to go to a competitive team, and he's willing to even to start battling, you know, like for 6, 7, and 8, if that's what it's got to be to start on a team. And I'm curious if he gets a deal, or if that's a guy who's going to also be on a PTO here within the next 6 days.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's willing to take a PTO, is he? Be interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Frankie? Out of sight, out of mind. And if all of a sudden you're coming off a tough year, now you don't go to training camp, how do you play? You know, what do? You sit and wait for an injury? Hey, you're probably better off to go to a PTO and get in some games and say, hey, here I am. These are the things I've worked on all summer long. I think I'm an improved player. So I agree with you that if it's not ideal, but it might be the only choice for some veterans as we get closer. Like, I do think,
point does he just jump in and say, I'm going to do the broadcasting full time? I know that's always going to be there waiting for him, but
yeah. Is he ready for that though? Like, I've been told by many people, PK Subban really wants to show he can still play in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
I think that's his focus. So, he doesn't need the money. So whether it's a PTO or a minimum 750, right? Cause a PTO could lead to the minimum 750 either way. So I'd be surprised if he didn't go to camp for some team.
There's still some other vets that we've known and have been around the league for a long time that are looking for deals. You know, I'm still surprised at this point, Evan Rodriguez, 19 goals, 43 points. What happened there? Obviously the agent change on July 12th. I don't know if it scared any team off, but I think it certainly made them stop and think, what was the story behind that? And then now all the cap space is eaten up. Sonny Milano is still out there, of course, previously of the Anaheim Ducks. And then some of the other vets that are looking for deals. You know, Tyler Ennis, 57 games, 24 points last year, limited ice time. You know, you can
hasn't had any bites as of last week. So,
but he's the perfect guy. If you're going to, you know, 750, 800 to pencil in at the bottom of your lineup, like he produces, he just does.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah, right. I think there's he's another guy who's a prime PTO candidate, right? And he's done a PTO before, so it wouldn't shock me whatsoever.
Who was really good in the playoffs that I really enjoyed watching, that he's hanging around with Calgary again, and probably my guess will end up going there on some kind of minimum deal like he did last year. I thought Michael Stone was really versatile for Calgary, just watching them in the playoffs. Like, I think he gave them a shot in the arm that, you know, they had some injuries. He was able to play a couple different positions, got some power play. Like, I just enjoyed watching him. 5 points in 9 games in the playoffs. I thought he had a lot left.
Depth, right shot defenseman, Frank. They're like unicorns. So you're, that's
a guy. He's a guy that Vancouver should be all over. I know that he's a bit of a power play specialist, but like, they need right shot guys. Like, you need someone to plug into your lineup.
No. I also wonder about a veteran player like a Chris Russell, who all you know exactly what you get every time from him. And, you know, he's a number 7 ideally because he can play both sides, right? He's very specific. He's a guy who kills penalties. And that's what he does. And I think there's another veteran that likely will find himself on a PTO here in the next week.
Yep. Derek Brassard, another guy that ended up in Edmonton last year and didn't see much ice time, but Brassard is out there. You know, go through the list. Antoine Roussel, Victor Rask had 21 points last year in just 47 games. I know that was a tough trade last year going from Minnesota to Seattle, but he still ended up fine and played some time in the AHL as well. He's a guy that was making $4 million. Like, at 750, 800, $1 million, like, he should be able to play up to that level.
Well, that's where it illustrates the fact that all these guys are unsigned, Frank, because so many teams are already over LTI. So I think that definitely plays a factor. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk. We're going to have Bill Scott joining us for Capologist 101 coming up very soon as well.
What's up, guys? It's time for another edition of Buy or Sell, delivered by our friends at DoorDash. Promo code DFO or Rundown DD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. I've been reading that for about a year and a half, and I still mess it up pretty consistently. Today, you know me, I'm a bit of a gambling man, and I was over at PointsBet Canada, and I noticed that they have some early odds up for the 4 big NHL awards, the Rocket Richard, Hart Trophy, Vezina, and Norris. So here's how buy or sell is going to work today. I'm going to tell you who PointsBet has as the favorite. You can either buy or sell, agree or disagree on them being the favorite, but I'm not going to make it just that easy for you. If you buy and you agree, I want to know who you think is maybe a good sleeper candidate for that award, someone lower down the odds board who you're keeping an eye on. And if you sell, I want to know who you actually think should be the favorite. So we're going to start with the big one, the Hart Trophy. PointsBet Canada has Connor McDavid as the big favorite, plus 225 to win the Hart. Frank, you buying or selling on that?
Buying. I mean,
how could you not?
Yeah, I have a hard time betting against Connor McDavid at any point, anywhere, ever.
So give me someone maybe a little lower down who you think is like, I think they could have a good Hart Trophy case this year. They could have a good season.
Kirill Kaprizov.
That was a name that actually stood out to me. He comes in at 14-1. Jay, buy or sell?
He made my list. He made my top five last year. So,
yeah, he was in the mix for a good portion of last season as like a top three guy as well. Jay, buy or sell on McDavid?
That's hard to sell on that. I'll buy as well, because you look at McDavid, he just set a career high in points despite having the lowest on ice shooting percentage of his career, as well as his own personal lowest 5-on-5 shooting percentage over the last 5 years by like 4%. Like, usually he's around 14. That's what his average was in the first 6 years. He was at 10 last year. I think Kane's going to help his on ice shooting percentage because he's a better finisher. So I think he might be a 130 point player. You're a 130 point player. You're pretty much locking in that you're going to win the heart. But Kaprizov is a very good pick as an alternative choice. I'm going to go with, Like, hey, Auston Matthews still scores goals at a ridiculous rate. And when you score goals, you get people's attention. It's hard to count out Matthews because he could easily score 60 again.
Does that count as lower down the board, taking the reigning Hart winner?
Well, it's not first on the board. So, I mean, technically it's lower
technically, but yeah, how low on the board do you want
me to really, I know you're digging deep there, Jay.
Well, how low do you want me to go on the board?
60 goal scorer that won the award last year.
Here's one. What about 20-1 Igor Shesterkin? I know it was a big debate last year, but if his numbers were to, like, let's say, get better this season, he could have a pretty interesting Hart Trophy case, especially if the Rangers like win the East or something like that in the regular season.
Yeah, all depend. Like, to me, for a goalie to win the Hart, you got to play a lot of games. And I'm not sure the Rangers, if they're like, I just don't know if teams are going to have, like, when Dominic Hasek was winning the Hart, the guy was playing 73 games.
Yeah.
Right. So I just don't think a goalie can play enough games to win the Hart.
Yeah.
Kale McCarr.
He'd be interesting. He's a little bit lower than the 20-1 mark that Shesterkin was, but he's another guy too.
I'm just trying to think of other names that might.
I was going
to
say Nathan MacKinnon actually, because it's the last year of his deal, and maybe he'll try to go out on a big note before he gets this huge contract.
Are you surprised that he hasn't signed an extension already? I am.
Do you think a part of that though could be they're waiting for clarity on if the cap will go up, like you talked about earlier, Frank? Could it go up maybe a little bit next summer and that'll change?
Nope. Because it's the CBA is contractually written. Like, we already know that they need to hit a certain revenue threshold for it to go up 1 million. It doesn't contemplate any increase further than that.
So Sakic rarely moves overly quick, and usually it works out. So to me, you have until what, June 30th to sign Nathan MacKinnon. There's lots of time.
Everything that I heard heading into the summer was Nathan MacKinnon is signing a record contract. He's topping McDavid.
Interesting.
Yeah, well.
That'll be a big step up from the bargain he's
on. Was it 13 or 15? That was really the question.
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting.
Is he worth it?
I mean, you can't let him walk, right? Like, it's almost one of those players where you just have to give him, to some extent, a blank check, don't you?
Is he worth it? I think he is. I think he is.
13 mil?
Big McDavid, you could make the argument, is worth 20.
Yeah.
So how far down is MacKinnon? Like, you need to readjust. Think about how long ago McDavid signed the deal.
Yeah.
4 years. Yeah.
All right.
It's a long time.
Moving on to our next award.
Cap hasn't gone up much though.
It will. Everyone knows it is. That's the thing.
That's so the thing.
Fair. They're in big trouble.
Kale McCarr is the runaway favorite for the Norris Trophy. He comes in at +150, with second on the board being down at 6.5-1. So, Jason, you buying or selling on Kale McCarr as the runaway Norris Trophy favorite?
God, it's hard not to. Like, he's so excited of a player, right? Like, I mean, those eagle turns and how he accelerates through an eagle turn, it's ridiculous. But I kind of have to buy for him. Might sound crazy, but I might even buy more on him than I would McDavid at the Hart. And I really like McDavid as the Hart. But I just think Kale McCarr, what he did last year, kind of the only thing that stops him from winning is an injury.
Yeah,
I'll say that. The only thing I think that can stop him from winning. But if I was picking someone else, I would go
Roman Josi.
I'm going to go with Moritz Seider. I think Mo Seider will, if he continues to develop, he'll get a lot of votes.
That was going to be my lower down the board pick. He's 25-1. There's a whole
group. Not low enough for you, Frank.
Well, it's pretty low considering he was 46 points back of Roman Josi. That's a lot of ground to make up. And I know it's not all about points, but he was 19th among defensemen last year. That's a big jump.
He still had just a damn good year for a rookie. And if he takes
it was incredible. And I'm interested to see what the next step is. I like all the other components. He's not anywhere near, he doesn't get anywhere near the points. And I think really importantly, the style points of McCarr.
Fair enough. So you're buying on
McCarr. I'll give you a name though. I'll buy on McCarr, but I'll give you my guy, Aaron Ekblad.
Without Mackenzie Weegar?
Yep.
It's 12-1 on the odds board. So not that far.
Look at his year before he went out. And I know a lot of people are curious to see what the Panthers are going to be like with all the changes they made, but 57 points in 61 games before going down with that injury. He's playing 25 minutes a night. There was only a couple people in that category.
Yeah. Fair enough. Third one we got is the Vezina Trophy, where the reigning winner, Igor Shesterkin, is the favorite at plus 250. Frank, you buying or selling on Igor as the favorite to win the Vezina? And, you know, same rules. If you're buying, give me someone lower down the board. If you're selling, who do you think it should be?
I'm going to sell, and it's not because I don't like Igor Shesterkin. I love him. I just think it's so incredibly difficult for a goaltender to replicate his success year in and year out. The Rangers also have a different feel now. They're dealing with expectations. They're expected to be among the top class of the league now, having gotten to the Final Four. And I think that's really hard to do. The guy that I am going to pick is, it's hard to go against Vasilevsky, but I'm going to go with UC Saros.
Plus, he's 10-1 plus 1000. So a decent pick down the board there. Frank or Jason, what do you got?
I will sell for the same reasons Frank said, and I'm going to go with a wild card in Jake Oettinger.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like that 18-1. He's almost in a way like a similar trajectory to Shesterkin, right? Is coming off a good year. And if he takes a step forward, he's going to be a top tier goalie in the NHL. So Oettinger at 18-1. That's the second time in a row we've agreed on our lower down pick, Jason. We're going to wrap it up with the Rocket Richard Trophy. As you can guess, Austin Matthews plus 200. That's one of those things I look at and I kind of just go, it feels like free money to me. Like he's probably going to score 55 to 60 goals again. But Jay, you buying or selling on Matthews as the favorite to win the Rocket?
Like Makar, I think the only thing that derails him is an injury. I'm just not sure. Like I don't see Chris Kreider coming close. I think Leon Draisaitl can score 50 goals again. But I don't know if he can get to 60. So I will buy on Matthews as the art. I think he's kind of like Ovechkin, but you know what? I'll still go with the wild the Ovi. He's my best guess as a wild card. The one guy who's capable of scoring 60 and almost a lock to score 50 is Ovi. I know he's not overly far down the list, but at his age, that would still be a pretty big accomplishment. So I'll go with the grade eight.
Fourth on the board at 9-1 is Alex Ovechkin. Frank?
I don't think Ovi hits 50 again.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to bet against him, but at some point the age curve catches up, right? It has to. So go with Matthews. I made the bet last year. And the only thing that makes me nervous is exactly what we just talked about is the health. You know, he had some significant health issues two seasons ago, missed 9 games last year and still finished 5 clear of everyone. So, that's the only thing holding you up from making the bet.
Yeah, fair enough. 2-1 right now. How about this for a lower down option? 13-1. He almost had 50 last year. Kyle Connor. If the Jets have a bit of a better season, maybe he can get another 6 to 7 goals in there. Maybe 54 is enough to win it. 13-1. No bites. No bites on my Kyle Connor.
Idea. I like Kyle Connor, man. He might be the most overlooked steady goal scorer in the league.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, David Pastrnak's a guy thrown into that category as well. Although I don't know if
Pastrnak's the reigning Lady Bing winner, Kyle Connor, yeah. 4 penalty minutes last year. Insane.
That is wild. All right. That's going to be a wrap for another edition of Buy or Sell delivered by DoorDash.
Jason, can we talk? And Tyler, hopefully you can stay on for this.
Okay.
We saw on your Instagram last week, you were at a charity golf outing. Can we just talk about the pants that you were wearing?
My green ones?
Yes.
They match the glasses.
Okay. Buddy, you know what? Did you see that my glasses and pants, and I actually had a shirt that had a little bit of green in it that matched. It was stellar.
I don't know that you should be cheering or celebrating or patting yourself. Dude,
you know how many people came up to me and said, you're the best dressed guy on the course. Hey,
do you know how many of them?
I've had those pants for a long time and people with no fashion sense can't handle it. Like that can't be my concern. I can't worry about that sort of thing.
No, I mean, you can't, but when you show up to the course looking like you just went on a rager at an Avicii concert and did 9 pounds of coke, like that's what you showed up looking like.
Hey buddy, RIP to Avicii, but hey buddy, I got him on a lot of my, downloaded music. I love it. So
if you have not seen it, go to Jason's Instagram page and leave us a comment. Were we right or were we wrong? What is your take on Jason's style on the course? Neon green golf pants.
You're never afraid to be flashy, Jay. And I respect it. I think it's good. I think if you can buy
those pants for years, right?
I've had those pants Jason W. Greger on Instagram. Check him out. Give him a follow and give him a comment on the pants.
Yeah, trust me.
Sick. Your eyes will never be the same.
It's true, right? You know what? Everybody wishes they could find a pair like that. Hard to find. Galvin Green.
They don't make them in size 40 because they would just look like a neon blimp.
You know what? It's been so hot this summer. That was the first time I wore pants all year golfing. So,
is it getting cool up there?
Well, it was cooler that day, like 16. It was supposed to rain. But this week it's back up into the 20s again. So
yeah,
it's remember that. 20s, I don't even know what 20 is in Fahrenheit. Like
it's 70. 20 is 70.
70 is 20? All right. Yeah. So, yeah, 70 is perfect for golf for me.
Oh, it's the best ever. But so one cultural thing before we get to Bill Scott. What's it been like? I've been glued to my TV watching coverage of the Queen's death. What's it been like in Her Majesty's Canada?
Yeah, I'm probably not the right guy to ask. I'm not a big follower of that. And the funny thing, like I'm a big believer in certain traditions. I just don't know about this one. If you want to go way back into it, colonialism, we could have a whole conversation.
No, I don't want to do that. Yeah, I just want to ask what it's been like since the Queen died.
It doesn't do much for me. Like I'll say this, she was a great lady. She had an unbelievable life. Like, oh my goodness, 96 years. It's amazing. But I do think that her passing is really going to open up conversations of people saying, okay, in 2022, does Canada really need to have the same connection that they've always had with it? So,
I'm not from Canada, but I like the idea of it.
You do?
Yeah. It goes back a long way and I don't know. It seems kind of cool. It's something that was obviously something that we don't have.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. Yeah. To me, it doesn't.
She's very obviously a figurehead and there's no real, you know, Canada is basically self-governing, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's neat.
Yeah. Like I guess I just don't. I'd have to really, I'm probably not educated as much as I should be about it. So that's probably my own ignorance to be honest is I don't like, maybe there's more to it that they do that. I know that they donate a lot to charity. I understand that. But other than that, I'm like, what does it really do? And maybe it doesn't do anything good or bad. So to change it wouldn't matter. Right.
Well, I think that's the point is it doesn't really interfere much at all.
Yeah. So I just things that I couldn't care less about the royal family, like that type of drama, man. Like I know the Brits love it. Like their paper is so salacious, like any little tidbit of stuff, like, man, I feel for Meghan Markle's and Harry and them. And like, you look, there's a little bit of a change, Frank, that we've never really seen. Like there's never been a member of the royal family who kind of steps out and says, you know what? I'm out. So it's kind of unique, but she did have an amazing, like I was reading a lot of the tributes and a lot of the places she was and things she did, like 70 years as the head of state. Like that's never going to be matched. Right. Like you just think about it. Like Charles now takes over as the king. Well, he's obviously not going 70 years, right? His son won't go 70 years. Like a lot of things have to align. A, you have to get in power at a young age due to an early death of your parent. And then you have to live a long life. Like what an amazing life she lived though. I will say that.
I like the idea of it. Almost every monarchy in the world, there's only a few left that where it really matters, but they're basically popular sovereigns. Like they don't have any real powers. King of Sweden. I stopped in Belgium a few weeks back on my way to Italy. I didn't even know Belgium had a king, but they do. Like I enjoy reading about it, learning about it, the royal family and seeing how it operates and seeing the interaction with the politicians. It just, I don't know. It fascinates me and just the history of it. And to see all that changed during Queen Elizabeth's reign from, you know, not, you know, basically newspapers ruling the world to then, you know, launching into radio, then TV, then finally social media and seeing the country change and adapt and the kingdom and all these different, you know, properties and territories of the kingdom falling off. It just, I don't know. I enjoy it. So I enjoyed The Crown. I loved The Crown on Netflix.
Oh, see, I haven't watched it. So
you, like, so you should watch The Crown. Like, it might change your perspective.
Yeah, it's the one thing I get interested in a lot of unique things, but yeah, the monarchy just was never, it's never really been one. Like, I don't know why. Maybe I should educate myself more on it. I just haven't found a stepping off point that makes me want to say, hey, I gotta get more interested in this. I don't really see the point in it.
It just, I don't know, like to think how it blows your mind to sit back and think about how, you know, how we end up coming into this world and one person being born into this family gives you this type of life. And if you're born somewhere else to someone else,
well, yes,
your lot in life is so totally different. How that happens, what you end up becoming. That's what's crazy to think about.
Now that I would agree with you wholeheartedly. You look at, I look at my life, Frank. I felt like I won the lottery. Being born into a loving household gives you such a massive advantage. Yeah. Now, if you have a household that's, even middle class and your parents can, give you education, well, that, gives you a huge advantage. Like for me, where I was born in Canada, in my place to my family, felt like I won the lottery. When I look around to kids that are born in different situations, they have nothing, that they did nothing wrong. They were just born. No. And some places you're born well behind the eight ball, and other places you're born with a big benefit. Obviously not royalty benefit for me, but that would also, I don't know if I'd want to be a royal at the end of the day, like to live in where you're, everybody watches every action you do. Like, no, thanks. I don't think it would be. Yeah. People look at the finances of it. I look at the privacy factor and being able to, I got to do a lot of stupid shit, Frank, in my life that, like, let's be, and nothing illegal or nothing crazy, just stuff that out of sight, out of mind. And I think that's something that you never get in that. Like, you're born into it. You're a kid and they're watching you everywhere you go. Like, no, thanks.
It's not easy. No, I mean, you were handed a golden spoon, but definitely not an easy life. That's awesome. I just was curious on the Canadian perspective. Living in the US, I wondered what it was like for people in Canada.
I bet you everybody had, there's lots of people that have different looks at it for sure. Yeah. Frank, we had Bill Scott, who is assistant general manager and the resident capologist of the Oilers. He joins us. We're going to go in capologist 101 because there's lots of teams in similar boats. They're going to start the season in LTI. What does that mean for your team? Find out now with Bill.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
We are joined today by assistant general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Also, he is their resident capologist. Bill Scott joins us on the DFO Rundown. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
Bill, we're going to get into capologist, kind of like capologist 101 a little bit today, because this year is shaping up to be a lot different than other years from a cap perspective anyway. But I kind of want to go a quick little history for you to kind of, you know, what got you to this point and, you know, being an assistant GM, but also kind of, you know, how'd you get in line to be the capologist?
A lot of luck and probably timing and everything else. But I joined the Oilers in 2010. I was hired by Steve Tambellini as a general manager in Oklahoma City for the farm team there, and was there for about 4 years managing that team on a daily basis. And then Craig McTavish became GM here in Edmonton, and we had had a good relationship. And he gave me a call one day and said, would you like to come up to Edmonton and be our assistant general manager and take over some contracts and the cap and kind of all the CBA administrative side of it, and continue to do some stuff in the minor leagues and the American League, and go from there. So, I've been fortunate enough to work for Tambi, for Mac T and Peter Chiarelli and now Ken Holland. So, it's been a bit of a whirlwind over that amount of time, few too many general managers, but all great people and great people to work for and learn from.
How different is it working from one GM to the next?
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting because they've all got different styles. But I think I've taken a lot from every one of them. Tambi was obviously the person that hired me and got me into the NHL. So I'll forever indebted into him. He was just a first-class guy, all the way, anything you needed, he would take care of. And really just kind of showed you a way to treat people and he had, obviously had patience and was here at a turning time in the organization. We were going younger, and kind of laying the groundwork for what was hoped to be in a quick rebuild. But he was first class guy. And then Mac T, obviously everybody in Edmonton knows Mac T well, for his long career there, but Mac T was all about the team. All about family, people, and it just instilled a lot of confidence in you and brought a lot of energy to the office every day, and had a great work ethic too. So worked with him a lot closer, since I was in Edmonton with him, whereas with Tambi, I'd been in Oklahoma City. So we worked at arm's length and worked a lot with Ricky O at that time, when I was in Oak City. And then Peter Chiarelli, much different background, obviously, than those two. Lawyer background. He had been an agent, obviously, a great track record in Boston, and Ottawa. And he was, much different than the Mac T and Tambi, very, very highly organized. And that's not to say that the other guys weren't, but he was very dialed in on the finance side, on the budget side, on the CBA side. Because really that was his background. He had done a lot of the jobs that I was doing at the time. So he better prepared me, I think, going into budget meetings, into arbitration cases, into prepping for contracts. For me personally, he gave me a great background on that side of things. And then obviously we had a quick transition with Keith Gretzky as our interim GM. Keith and I have a great relationship, worked together for a number of years now, and then into Ken Holland. And I knew of Ken when he came in. I didn't know him personally, but he's come in and obviously with his wealth of knowledge and his career has really come in and brought a lot of these different things together, a lot of these traits that the other general managers had. And really he's all about relationships. He's all about communication. He gives everyone a platform to speak. It doesn't matter where you are in the organization. He makes everybody feel very valued and really, I think one of his greatest strengths is really just bringing people together, whether that's the players on the ice, the coaching staff, the trainers, our scouts. And he's just got that, that way that people gravitate towards him and kind of want to run through a wall for him. So, he's been terrific as well. And I've been lucky to work for really good people.
Bill, for a lot of people, you know, if you're an ex player, there's an advantage, whether you want to be a coach or, you know, maybe a GM or even getting into player development, what have you. You know, if you're not an NHL player there, I think it's maybe a little bit more of a grind and a lot. So for some of our audience members who, you know, who obviously don't play in the NHL, but are like, you know, I'd like to get into management, maybe in the NHL. What's the best way to go about getting in?
Yeah, I don't think there's one specific way to do it other than really find any opportunity that you have and take it and don't worry about the pay. Don't worry about the position and grind away. I knew, you know, in high school, I quickly realized I was never going to play in the NHL. I wasn't a good enough hockey player. I played hockey all my life, but wasn't good enough to play at that level. So I did, you know, in high school, I did a co-op for our local junior A team, the Stouffville Spirit back in Ontario. From there, I went to Michigan State University. I worked for the hockey team at Michigan State. We had a great, Michigan State had a really good D1 program at the time. Always in the hunt for a national championship. And I said, when I went to college, I want to get something on my resume that when I leave college, it might give me a leg up on a job. And when I left college, I got an internship with the Nashville Predators. They were still relatively new into the league at that time, and worked for the Nashville Predators in their hockey operations department for a few months. And I got that internship. I mailed 50 resumes out to people that I had heard of or had some connection with in the National Hockey League. And two or three people got back to me. Cliff Fletcher was the general manager in Arizona at the time. Called, said, I got your letter, but unfortunately, we don't have a position. And David Poyle was one of them. And he said, we've just started an internship program. We're just going through our first person. If you'd like to be the second person to go through it, I'll put you in touch with our contact there and the person that manages it. Ironically enough, one of the rejection letters I got was from Ken Holland. So I ended up showing that to him a couple of years ago and said, well, we ended up getting to work together, 20 years down the road. But ended up taking an internship with Nashville. Unpaid internship, moved to Nashville, and it was there for a couple months. And this was the year before the lockout. So this was the 2003-04 season. Every team was making plans for the lockout at that time. If you recall, pretty much everybody knew they were going to miss some time that year. So a job actually opened up that fall in the ECHL, and I didn't know I knew the league, but I didn't know a whole lot about the ECHL at the time, and talked to David and a few people that I knew, and they said, if you can get a full-time job that's paid, take it. Because we're not going to have anything next year. We're going to be cutting staff. So I ended up moving to New Jersey, kind of sight unseen, and worked for the ECHL there for 3 years. That was a 7-day-a-week job. Had to be in the office every day during the season. So it was definitely a grind. I loved doing it. It was a great introduction into pro hockey. But you got to grind away if you want to work in this league. If you don't have the player background, really, you don't have that leg up and that institutional knowledge that those people do and that they've earned over time. So I went from there. I went to the American Hockey League, a similar role in hockey operations, handling all the contracts, all the supervised games from an officiating standpoint. Did a lot of work with our collective bargaining agreement between us and the PHPA, and then just made lots of contacts around the National Hockey League, because, as you know, most general managers in the American Hockey League are an assistant general manager, at least a position of influence with an NHL club. So from there, ultimately, the Oilers were moving their team out of Springfield, Massachusetts, and putting down roots in Oklahoma City. And I had heard they were looking for a general manager, and I threw my name into the hat, not thinking I would get a call back even necessarily. But I ended up having a great conversation with Tamby and was fortunate enough to get hired by a great organization like the Oilers. So, you know, it's a lot of years building up to it. It's a lot of hours moving around to places that you weren't expecting necessarily. And just trying to grind away and make some contacts and put in some time, and ultimate goal, obviously, to come up to the National Hockey League and try and win a Stanley Cup.
Bill, obviously, as an assistant GM, you're not just a capologist. You do a lot of pro scouting. But for today, for capologist 101, I kind of want to focus more about just the salary cap, especially because this year it looks like right now, like, there could be 10 to 12 teams who start the season in LTIR. And there's a difference before, like, being in LTIR, like in Edmonton, you're a team because of Smith and Klefbom, you're going to be in LTIR before day one of the regular season. Can you explain kind of in simple terms to the diehard fans, what's the difference? What's the challenge of being in LTIR before the season begins?
Yeah. So the way that we've positioned our LTIR and our cap really for the last couple of years since Oscar Klefbom's been on LTI, essentially at the beginning of the season, before you submit your season opening roster to the NHL, You know, the cap is going to be 82.5 this year. So you can submit your roster with all your players included. And if the cap is at 82.5 or below, you're cap compliant. And in that, in this case, we could do that, and have Oscar Klefbom and Mike Smith be included in that 82.5. And then after the first day of the regular season, we could invoke LTI on them. And then we would have their cap space to use. The negative to that, or the reason we have not done that over the past couple of years, is because that only then allows us to spend their money in season, rather than spending it out of season. So what we've basically done is we've taken the 82.5 cap and we've added Klefbom's $4 million and we've added Smith's $2 million. And we're basically going to run our team on, let's call it an $88.5 million cap. But by doing that, we are invoking LTI on those players prior to submitting our season opening roster, which basically means that when we set our roster on opening day and whatever number we're at on our cap, that's our cap for the year. So if we submit a roster with 23, let's call them healthy players, and we've spent 88 and a half, which means we've fully used our LTI space, then we do not have any extra room to call a player up during the season. Whereas if you invoke it after the regular season begins and you've got that $6 million there that you could do afterwards, you could trade for a $6 million player. You can recall players up to the value of $6 million, et cetera. So what we chose to do is really spend that money in the off season, try and have $82.5 million of healthy bodies on our roster when our season begins, and go from there. We feel it gives us, the best opportunity to put the best team on the ice right from day one. And obviously the negative to that is it doesn't allow much flexibility in season. Obviously, if somebody else gets hurt and they go on LTI during the year, you might open up some cap space. But other than that, it's going to be tight for the whole year. And I think there's going to be a whole bunch of other teams in a similar boat as ours, with this cap just not rising very much year to year right now.
Do you talk to other teams, capologists, about this challenge, or is that frowned upon?
I say we would talk in generalities on different challenges that we have. I don't think any team is really talking to another team about their specific situation and what you would do, what you wouldn't do. Though we're all very cordial with each other and we've got great relationships with each other, because we all respect the job that each other has to do for their teams. We're all still competitors and we don't really want to tip off the other side on what we're doing or what we're thinking. You could be in an offer sheet scenario. You could be talking through some things. You might have a couple extra things on the go, whether it be trade signings that they may be able to read into if you start presenting situations to them. So I think sometimes you'll look back at things that teams have done and you might talk about those things after the situation happens. But usually you won't really give any details away as you're going through it. But you might talk to people afterwards and say, hey, that was interesting what you did when you invoked LTI on this player. You made that trade and you opened up some cap space. You know, what were you thinking when you did that and how'd you come up with that idea? Different things like that.
Now, for your team or any team that's in a situation where you're starting the season in LTIR, there is the chance to make a trade to acquire a player who's going to be on LTIR if you can trade out somebody with salary. Otherwise, it doesn't really benefit you. Like if you're $6 million in LTIR and suddenly you get into eight, if you haven't freed up any actual cap space of 82 of the healthy body, 82 million for the healthy bodies, it doesn't help you, correct?
Correct. Yes. And even in season, you have to be able to account for those players. If you traded for a player that was on LTI with another team, they have to fit onto your roster, onto your active roster before you place them on LTI. So acquiring players that are on LTIR in general is not beneficial. There are a few certain situations, usually in the off season, where it could be beneficial to maximizing your off season cap space. But those are few and far between, but there have been a couple cases where teams have taken advantage of that.
So you had mentioned earlier that because you start any team this year, and I was looking at, you know, a Cat Friendly or Puckpedian, you know, they're pretty close to accurate as far as where the teams sit. And, you know, right now there's like 10 or 12 teams over. So you're as the capologist, Bill, for your team. You literally sit there with the calculator and that final data say, okay, here's the players we want because we want to get as close as possible. You don't want to be at 81.5 million
right,
and then get into LTI because basically you would lose a million. So you've got to get as close. You and every team in the league has to be as close to 82.5 million. And so that might be some maneuvering where we see teams have guys on the opening day roster for one day that we might not expect just because it pushes you right to the limit.
Yeah, 100%. And the difficulty with that is, you know, we plan out a bunch of scenarios and then reality happens. You know, you go into training camp thinking, okay, these 23 players are probably going to be on our team, or it might be between, you know, there might be two players battling for a spot, three players battling for a spot. So you have all your cap scenarios sorted out in those cases, but then injuries happen in training camp. And I believe it was last year we had a scenario where our capture point on LTI was going to be, I think we had it within $5,000 or $7,000 of maxing out, which is really, really good. And we had an injury in the last preseason game that disrupted that. And we ended up capturing, I think, about $100,000. So it made a difference. And that's $100,000 we didn't have to use in the season at that point. So you plan for all scenarios. You try and make sure that you've got a couple outs for yourself in worst case scenarios. But until you really see what happens through the 8 preseason games, really you're crossing your fingers, hoping that you stay healthy and going from there.
Now, part of your job is you have to crunch the numbers for today, but you also have to have part of you that's looking ahead to next season and probably 2 years down the road. And 2 years down the road, there seems to be maybe some breathing room coming, you know, speculation that, you know, the cap might go anywhere from 8 to 10 million, but next year is probably only a million again. How do you balance that? Like, how often are you, and let's just use a spreadsheet because most people can visualize a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
How often is that thing changing and upgrading? And how many years down the road is a realistic look at for a capologist? Is it 3? Is it 5?
Yeah, I think, well, for the majority of your contracts are not long-term. Now, right now we do have some guys signed up long-term. Obviously we've got Nuge and Hyman and Campbell and Nursey and some guys like that. And Connor's got 4 years, Leon's got 3 years left. So, so we have most of our plan laid out for the next 3 or 4 years. Usually we're right now, especially with the cap not going up significantly, our planning year to year is really, you know, it's going up $1 million. It's going up $1 million. Don't expect the cap to go up more than $1 million for the next few years. Because if you remember a couple of years ago, we thought it was going to go up 4 or 5 million and then COVID happened. So we don't want to project and plan as if that cap is going to go up significantly. We certainly don't want to project that too early, though we are optimistic that at some point in the next couple of years, it will. So I think for us, we project out 2 to 3 years. With a long-term look, but we're not quite as focused on it. We obviously want to make sure that we're structuring things properly from our cap standpoint, from our finance standpoint, but really 2 to 3 years, especially as the cap has not gone up significantly in the last couple of years. So that's what we look at. We look at that, especially when we're looking at trades. We're looking at signing players long-term, you know, how is their contract going to affect somebody else that might be up on our team in 2 years or other free agents, other restricted free agents, arbitration cases. These are the things that we try and project out and put a realistic number on where we think these players are going to land. You know, we can put low numbers on it and hope and cross our fingers, but especially with the RFAs, with arbitration cases, you know, the number is going to be the number and you're going to have to come in. You can't be unreasonable because we do have that process to make sure they get paid fairly and within the norms of the league.
Now, speaking of arbitration, as you plan your case, very few of them actually go to arbitration. Mm-hmm. How many hours does it take to come up with an arbitration defense? And usually how many comparables are you using as a team? I know a lot of these never even get made public. A lot of the stuff settles, but is it 3 players? Is it 4 per team? Like, what's an average arbitration and how long does it take to compile ultimately, and you never use it.
Yeah. I mean, really you're starting that anytime you have an RFA with arbitration rights, I'd say in about January, you're starting to build your case. Really, and it sounds bad, but against them, right? You're trying to get the best deal. And I think that's a big reason why most of these don't go to arbitration is you're going to say things in your brief, that the player, you know, the player doesn't want to read and you don't really want to tell them. You're going to tell them why they're not as good as they think they are. They're going to tell you why they're better than you think they are, in those cases. And really, when you're trying to build the team and you're trying to build relationships with players and long-term relationships, the arbitration process isn't ideal for us or for them. And I think in most cases, cooler heads prevail and you're usually close enough on a number, that neither side wants to go through that arbitration, case and that procedure, as it isn't healthy. And as we've seen, most players that do go through that aren't with their team within about a year or two. So, you know, we've found with our guys, especially obviously we had two this year, you know, we're building that case up. It's a lot of hours. You know, we use a law firm that does a lot of these, as well across the league. And there's a few different law firms that teams use, and they help build the case with us. And really we collaborate on it. We exchange notes with them. You know, it's always good to have another perspective when you're going through these things. Sometimes we can be in such a silo, within our own team and our own thoughts, that it's good to get an outside perspective on it as well. So, we go through this, we build the brief with them. You know, we're in touch constantly and we keep them up to date on how the negotiations are going, and where they're going. And, you know, sometimes you're telling them to pause and we're going to pull back on our brief a bit when you think things are going well. And sometimes you got to rev them up again. But you're building that brief throughout the year. You're finding comparables. How many comparables do you find? Really, it depends on the data and how many comparables you can find when you use reasonable ranges in the statistics. Typically, there's going to be three or four, I would say. But oftentimes, you will find one comparable that is just a mirror image of your player. And both sides usually know it and they get settled as a result. Other times, there isn't a great comparable. There's guys far and wide. And then you just try and find the range of reasonable with the agent, with the player on what makes sense for both sides, whether it's doing a multi-year deal or just going through the one-year deal on what you think you would have gotten in arbitration had you gone through the procedure.
Currently in arbitration, my understanding is analytics doesn't play a big factor in if the arbitrator was to rule. It's more about points, time on ice, stuff like that. Do you think that would change moving forward as especially these companies that NHL teams are using or are presenting more analytical data? Do you think that changes, or because the arbitrator isn't well-versed, it's likely going to be simple statistics?
Yeah, I think until the arbitrators are more well-versed in the analytics and the advanced stats, it's going to stick to the simple statistics and the normal statistics that everybody's used to. I think they give you the reality of what has actually happened. You know, there's expected goals for, expected goals against, different things like that. They're expected, but they're not what happened. So I think for an arbitrator, when they're trying to find black and white, they have to look at what's actually happened in the season or in the previous season. And while we know every situation is different for players, a player on Edmonton Oilers is different than a player on the Anaheim Ducks, is different than a player on the Toronto Maple Leafs, and what they have around them. So generally, I think they're just going to go back to the regular statistics that have been used for years. It also goes back to past practice and principles that have been laid out in these arbitration cases and rulings in the past. So I think for the analytics to jump into the arbitration cases and really carry some weight, that's going to take some time before we get to that part, get to that point.
Bill, we always like to end our interview with rapid fire. The only rule is you have to answer the question. All right. So I'd like to have a little bit of fun. So let's say when you avoid arbitration, what's the cocktail of choice?
Diet Pepsi. I'm not a drinker, so Diet Pepsi.
Diet Pepsi. Yeah. Do you like float drinks?
Float, like a root beer float?
Yeah.
No. Leave the ice cream. I love ice cream. Leave it on the side, though. Yeah.
Okay. You've scouted a lot. Best press box food in the NHL?
Ooh, probably Chicago. Chicago always puts on a nice spread. Yeah.
And what, any favorite in Chicago?
They just have lots of everything. They got a whole spread up there in the press box. It's always pretty nice up there. Yeah.
Are you a healthy eater or do you dabble in the candy in the press box?
I wouldn't say I'm a healthy eater, but I'm not a big candy popcorn. That's the weakness for me in the press box for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Negotiating contracts. Is it obvious? Are there certain agents that you negotiate better with in the organization? Then you guys will know that. So maybe Ken deals with other guys or Keith Gretzky. Does each organization, do you find that there's certain agents that you have a better relationship with? Is that pretty obvious in negotiations?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time it's who has the best relationship. You know, it depends on the player and the relationship, but who has the best relationship with the agent. Oftentimes that person will take over the negotiation or do that negotiation. And it depends on the player as well and how you acquired the player and different things like that. So, you know, Ken's pretty good about if it's somebody that I know well, he'll have me do the negotiation. If it's somebody that he knows, he's going to do the negotiation and I'll supply him some stats and some background work to give them a little bit of ammo on our side. So it just seems to be situational and case by case in our organization, at least.
Was there ever an arbitration case that you wanted to go through just to present your case?
No, I don't think you ever want to go through that. I think we've had a couple interesting briefs that we've put together. But at the end of the day, I don't think you ever want your player to see that. And we don't really want to see theirs. And it's always better for the relationship to settle these things before you get to that spot.
If you could change one thing in the salary cap, what would it be?
One thing in the salary cap that we would change, what would it be? That's a good question. You know, we've just lived with it for so long. What would I change? I think there's been some interesting ideas out there. They completely take away from the entire concept of the 50-50 revenue split. One thing I've always thought is interesting is having a homegrown player that doesn't count against your cap. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting idea somebody brought up. Whether or not that ever happens, I think that's going to be difficult when you're splitting revenue 50-50 between the league and the players. But that one I thought was interesting for a homegrown player.
I'll present you my idea that I would like to see in the CBA. A maximum 5-year contract for any player over the age of 28. I think it would benefit the players and the teams, less buyouts, less dead cap space. Do you think it's ever possible that could happen?
I think it would be difficult to tag the maximum term to an age. I think the union would probably not like that rule. Would it save teams from doing some silly things? Probably. It would give us a reason to not be able to offer a 6, 7, 8 year deal. But I think anytime you're limiting players' rights, players' abilities, those things are difficult to get through for sure.
Bill, best of luck in the coming weeks, getting right to the 82.5 threshold. See if you can get better than $5,000 that you were close to last year. I guess we'll that's the goal. Best.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do our best.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us on the DFO Rundown.
Thanks, Jason. Good talking to you.
That was Bill Scott, Frank. Interesting. The one rule he'd like change in the CBA, have basically like a franchise player, a drafted player from your organization. That's been talked about a lot. And, you know, I wonder.
Not at any serious level.
Yeah, I know. But it's been bantied about, like, that's the one thing that I've heard other people you've talked to over the, that's the one thing people are interested in. Obviously it's not happening in the current CBA, and I don't know if it would ever happen.
I don't think it'll ever happen.
Definitely would be a discussion point for sure, right?
It'd be interesting. I don't think there's any appetite for any, I shouldn't say any, some owners have the appetite, but for anyone to take money out of the system that would make it anything less than a 50-50 split.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Well, Frank,
if anything, at any point, Jay, it's going to, you know, the conversation at some point in the next CBA to be had will be owners taking more than a 50-50 split.
Yeah, good luck.
It's always going down for the players. It was at 57 in the last CBA, down to 50. It'll keep going down.
Frank, have yourself an awesome week. We'll talk to you Friday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you gotta predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.